Moonlight representatives, Lori Guaco and Peter Krasnov.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and or Vice Chair and members of the board. My name is Lori Guaco. I am the attorney for Moonlight Associates, LLC, and I will be presenting today along with Peter Krasnov of West Environmental, who is an environmental consultant who has been working with Moonlight Associates during, not starting in 2009, but shortly thereafter. And I will say that Moonlight Associates, LLC, is a part of the voluntary cleanup program. They have been working out at the site since 2009, conducting a number of investigations, and they have also installed the system which is addressing the soil vapor at the site to make certain that the occupants are in a safe environment out there. It is our hope that our presentation will answer questions that have been raised thus far by the board and will provide you with factual information regarding the site and the legal basis for naming United Artists in this order, as well as the environmental information and data that has been developed at the site and through extensive and thorough reviews of documents regarding groundwater, soil, etc. I'm going to start with our first slide, which I noted Mr. King also used in his slide presentation. I think we both probably liked it because whatever happened to Baby Jane is up on the marquee, and that and that is still a cult classic, I will say. And this is a photo from the 1960s, and I still like that movie, and I still love those two actresses. So UATC should be named as a discharger. That's why we are here today. The RWQCB order is not barred by the UATC bankruptcy. They entered bankruptcy in approximately 2000, and a bankruptcy confirmation order was entered in January of 2001. UATC, as the owner and master lessor, permitted the discharge of PCE. The only documentation we have of the leases, unfortunately, is the master lease. Now, UATC has made a representation that they destroyed documentation regarding their site. It was their company policy in 2006, so that's one reason we don't have those leases. But if we examine the master lease, it provided UATC control over subleases, and those subleases included the dry cleaning tenants. Now, having been a lawyer for 33 years, I can tell you that if you review the master lease, there is a very good chance that the leases that were in place during that time period in the 70s and before that in the 1960s included terms that were in the master lease, because that's what people tend to do who use lawyers. Large corporate entities use lawyers. There was a reference to simply the theater out at the site. In fact, UATC owned and operated the shopping center. There was a theater there. And Mr. King, I was surprised to see this. He found something I didn't. I like that. But he also found that United Artists owned and operated a shopping center in, I believe it was Millbrae, California, that also had a theater and also had a dry cleaning operation at that Millbrae location. So kudos to you on finding that. UATC had knowledge of the dry cleaning activities through various written documents that we were able to obtain from the state fire marshal and the County of Santa Clara building records. We know that Moonlight Cleaners operated at the site during the UATC tenure of 1961 to 1978. How do we know that? We know because there are recorded documents with the Santa Clara County Recorder's Office, which have been submitted to the Regional Board, clearly showing that dry cleaners were operating during the entire time period that UATC was associated with the property, whether as an owner or as a master lessor. And I would add that the master lessor status of UATC, after it sold the property in 1975, essentially mirrored the ownership status. They were responsible for the tenants. They were responsible for supervising them, collecting rents, etc. And that brings up another important point, that United Artists, or UATC, was in the stream of commerce with this property. When you operate a shopping center, you derive rents from operating that shopping center, and that's exactly why people do own real property. They hope to make income off of it. So they were in the stream of commerce doing this, and they then let the premises to various tenants, including the dry cleaner. The issuance of an order to a former landowner, UATC, is consistent with SWRCB precedent for naming dischargers at sites. The order is not barred by bankruptcy. The UATC bankruptcy was filed in Delaware in the year 2000. Third Circuit law applies in Delaware. This is just standard Hornbook law. The case of In Re Tarico Electronics, Inc., cited at 8 Fed 3rd 146, Third Circuit 1993, which precedes the filing of the bankruptcy, controls and is directly on point in this matter. That case found that a regulatory agency order does not constitute a claim and is therefore not barred. And a claim is a very important item in a bankruptcy, because bankruptcy law essentially says that if you had the opportunity to make a claim or should have made a claim, and then the bankruptcy is resolved and those claims are discharged, then it's essentially over. But what Tarico said was very, very important. When a regulatory or governmental agency issues an order, that does not constitute a claim. And so, therefore, it is not barred by current or prior bankruptcy proceedings. In this particular case in Tarico, there were ongoing Chapter 11 bankruptcy proceedings, and the government issued an order, did not make a claim in the bankruptcy, and the court found that it was not barred. There are some similarities here. Tarico was a former lessee of the contaminated property in New Jersey. The New Jersey Department of Environmental Protection and Energy issued an order to clean up the property. The court decided that the order did not constitute a claim because Tarico was ordered to clean up a hazardous waste site, which posed an ongoing hazard, similar to what is occurring at our site, the former Moonlight Cleaner site. And because this cleanup obligation was not a claim, it was not subject to discharge in the bankruptcy. So just to sum up, the RWQC has issued a tentative order to UATC for the investigation, cleanup, and abatement of PCE contamination at the Moonlight site. The 2001 bankruptcy confirmation order does not bar the issuance of the order by the RWQCB to UATC. Now, the next section I'm going to discuss is UATC as owner and master lessor permitted the discharge of PCE. As I've discussed, UATC was the owner of the site from 1952 through 1975. It then became the master lessor at the site from 1975 through the end of 1978. And UATC, as owner and master lessor, had lease agreements with the dry cleaner operators. In the master lease, it specifically references subleases in sections 4.02, 18.01, 22.01, 23.05, and 23.06. Let's look at the master lease here. In section 4.02, it contains a direct reference to subleases with tenants. Those tenants would include Moonlight Cleaners, as we know from the recorded documentation on file with the Santa Clara County Recorder's Office. In section 18.01, and I quoted it here, it says, UATC, and it's as the master lessor, shall, at its own cost and expense, promptly comply with or cause compliance with all requirements of all statutes, laws, ordinances, orders, rules, regulations, and/or requirements of the federal, state, county, and municipal authorities. And that's a direct quote. UATC had an obligation to cause compliance by the subtenants. These subtenants included Moonlight Cleaners, and they had an obligation to cause compliance with nuisance law would have been included in the various areas outlined above. In terms of knowledge of activities, I would refer you to what is Appendix F in the board packet. And Appendix F contains some very important written documentation regarding knowledge of activities. The first one is the application for the building permit. And this application for building permit was issued to the owner, recited as United California Theater, and then an agent of the owner, the contractor, signed that document. And underneath the signature line, it specifically says contractor, agent. And this building permit is in the amount of $1,000. Now, there's been some talk. It's only $1,000. What's $1,000? Let's take ourselves back to 1961. $1,000 in 1961 was a lot of money. I didn't go online. I should have asked my son, who's majoring in economics in college, please figure this out for me, honey. What was $1,000 in 1961? But I didn't do it. But I know that it was an awful lot of money, because I'll bet you people were making like $6,000 or $7,000 or $8,000 or $10,000 back in 1961. And this was the owner of the property who takes out the building permit, and it specifically is for Moonlight Cleaners at Moonlight Shopping Center. The second piece of documentation that's important is the certificate of occupancy. And that certificate of occupancy, once again, is issued to United California Theaters, Inc., not Moonlight Cleaners, but the owner of the property. And they're talking about that it's ready for the occupancy. And the third document in the Appendix F is the state fire marshal document. Now, this would have been a public record document, and this document is very important in terms of establishing what sort of activities were going to be associated with the dry cleaning equipment out there. And if you read this permit, it covers the installation of four specific pieces of equipment that only used PCE. The first one is the Hoffman Master Jet Cleaning Unit, which used PCE. The next is the Hoyt SF-130 Reclaimer, which reclaimed PCE, sort of acted like kind of a dryer type system, but reclaimed it, because you have to remember that PCE was expensive for dry cleaners, and so they were going to use that PCE again. So this equipment was trying to reclaim it. Unfortunately, it didn't reclaim all of it. The next piece is the Burcombo filter still cooker, which boiled the PCE. And the last piece is the VaporMat Model 800, which captured the PC vapors. What's important about this slide is that if you look at a recorded document in 1975, which was a security interest given by Mr. Reed, who is the current dry cleaner, and the security interest given to the Bank of America, it lists the same exact equipment that we are seeing here 14 years later, and in fact, they added equipment to it. So there is even additional dry cleaning equipment as of 1975 being used out at the site. And that shows continuous operation of that equipment at the dry cleaning site. Now, I'd like to just take 2 moments, because I know our time is short. On the second page of the state fire marshal permit, there is much language in here that shows the hazardous nature of PCE. I can tell you that the five and dime that was probably out there at that time didn't have anything like this. It says in number one that everything needs to take place in equipment approved for that purpose by the state fire marshal. Number two says it has to be a ventilated enclosure, and that you have to be careful in the event a toxic concentration of vapor develops. They are calling that out because it was something to be very concerned about. And that doesn't just mean a fire hazard. That means it's a toxic concentration of vapor. They want to protect people from that. And number three talks about automatically exhaust vapors to the ventilation duct provided. Number four talks about exhaust ducts that have to be on the exterior of the building. Well, of course, the owner has control over the exterior of any of the building there. Number five talks about if muck is removed, you have to have an approved breathing mask. Well, that's pretty important in terms of what they were dealing with out there, obviously hazardous. And number six talks about there must be approved piping. And number seven says that there has to be a fan on and the dampers of the vapor mat must be open before the units can be put into operation. So this is a highly regulated activity that was going on out there. I've been over most of this just now, and the one thing that I would just say is that this type of activity was heavily regulated. The state fire marshal was involved, and the owner of the property had a heavily regulated activity, which was ongoing on the property that it owned and was a lessor on. Just going to catch up with my notes here, if you just give me a moment. Thank you. Moonlight Cleaners operated from 1961 to 1978. There was a certificate for limited partnership for Moonlight Cleaners Dry Cleaning Plant, which was recorded on October 11, 1961 for the Schroeders and Mr. Benton Court. There was a certificate of occupancy, as we know, that was recorded in 1962. And we have provided the regional board and also United Artists with copies of various documents that we found with the county recorder's office. UATC permitted the discharge. The State Water Resources Control Board has consistently taken the position that a landowner who has knowledge or should have known of the activity taking place and has the ability to control the activity has permitted the discharge within the meaning of Water Code Section 13304. And that is also found in the Water Quality Order 8912 in Re San Diego Unified Port District. In that Port District case, there's a footnote that also refers to various orders, which are 89-1, 87-5, 87-6, 86-16, and 84-6, as well as the Atwater Memorandum that's dated May 8th of 87. The staff cited the John Stewart case, which was discussed by the United Artists attorney, and in that case it asked the question, did petitioner have the legal power to stop contamination? The answer in that decision was yes, because the lease provided petitioner would comply with all statutes, laws, etc. That's identical to what we found in the master lease. The order also said that the petitioner had legal interest in the property and derived income from it, for example, economic benefit, and that the contractual position of petitioner as lessor and sublessor of the service station gave him enough legal control over the property to hold him responsible for what took place. UATC permitted or threatened to permit discharge of waste as the owner of Moonlight Shopping Center and as the master lessor. Water Code Section 13304 authorizes an order against any person who has caused or permitted, causes or permits, or threatens to cause or permit any waste to be discharged into the waters of the state and creates or threatens to create a condition of pollution or nuisance. In the Logsdon case, the question was asked, petitioners stated that they were not legally responsible for the acts of their tenant, of which they had no knowledge. And the board answered in that order and said, a landlord knows or is chargeable with the knowledge that waste was being discharged or placed where it could be discharged on the property, and knowledge of an agent is imputed to his principal by operation of law, even in situations where the knowledge was not, in fact, communicated. If the nature of the waste is hazardous, such discharge can be presumed hazardous. And that's in the In re Logsdon order number WQ 846, and it also cites Civil Code sections 2330, 2332, and 2338. And we refer back in our case to the state fire marshal permit, the building permit, and the certificate of occupancy. UATC is properly named as a discharger under the Tirico case. It's not barred. The master lease demonstrates that UATC, as the owner and master lessor, permitted the discharge of PCE because the master lease dictates that UATC cause compliance under all laws. Moonlight Cleaners operated there from 61 to 78. The state fire marshal permit lists PCE using equipment at Moonlight and the hazards associated with that use, and the issuance of the order to UATC as former landowner is consistent with SWRCB precedent for naming discharges at sites under Water Code Section 13304 and water quality orders. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. Otherwise, I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Krasnoff.
I think we're ready. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Vice Chair Young, members of the board. My name is Peter Krasnoff. I'm with West Environmental, and I have taken the oath. I'm here as a consultant to Moonlight Associates, and I'm going to focus on similar series of technical topics covered by Nathan King earlier today and covered in the staff report, looking at the timing of the releases. And I think that some of the questions that got asked earlier today will hopefully be addressed through this presentation. There are multiple lines of evidence that there were releases during the 1960s and 1970s. We know that Moonlight, as Ms. Gualco explained, was a tenant from 1961 through the United Artists Theater Circuit, or UATC's, control of the property through 1978. The equipment that was used, the dry cleaning equipment, used PCE, and I'll go through some additional support on that. There was a fair amount of discussion about the depth of groundwater and its relationship to the contamination, and there were lower groundwater elevations in the 1960s and 70s, and what we find, and that's consistent with an earlier release, is there's actually higher PCE concentrations at depth, and as the groundwater elevations rose in the Santa Clara Valley Basin, the concentrations actually got pulled up with the rising groundwater, which is very consistent with the line of evidence of an earlier release. There's also been a discussion by the UATC consultant about the length of plume and the travel time. A review of the data shows that that line of evidence also shows that it was a pre-1978 release. And I'll discuss the groundwater flow direction and how that is also consistent with a pre-1978 release. So the particular dry cleaning equipment used and released PCE. We've discussed the 1961 fire department records, some of the particular equipment, the Hoffman Master Jet, the Hoyt SF-130 reclaimer, which is basically a dryer. I'll talk a little bit about the per combo filter still because it plays a particular role in being a source of contamination, and the vapor mat model 800, which is further indication of, if you will, that there were PCE vapors being released to the atmosphere, and those PCE vapors will permeate the concrete. We know this. We know that a lot of what we do in addressing dry cleaner sites now is we're trying to address the vapors that are coming up from soil gas. Well, that same phenomena works from inside the dry cleaner down. So it's, you open up the bottle of ammonia in the room, the vapors go out. In the PCE, it's heavy, it sinks through the concrete as a vapor, contaminates soil, sort of like coming back into a hotel room after someone has smoked a cigarette. You know they were in there. There will continue to be releases years after the PCE dry cleaner operated. We have documentation through 1975 confirming that this same equipment, now some 14 years older, and that's significant because this equipment does corrode, it does deteriorate. They used rubber hoses with PCE on this dry cleaning equipment. That's important because these hoses, rubber hoses, are not compatible with PCE. And I've been involved in a number of dry cleaner matters over the years and read enough depositions and talked to enough dry cleaner operators, and they're all going to tell you, yeah, the hoses dried out and cracked and we had releases. So we know that if you had a piece of dry cleaning equipment there for 14 years and it was in contact with PCE, there were releases of PCE. This is a copy of the 1975 document showing Moonlight Cleaners and the list of the same equipment being there 14 years later. So I'll back up a little bit on this dry clean process because that's sort of at the heart of the matter here. It is similar to the home washer-dryer process, and particularly during this time period. We have a washing machine, and some of the dry cleaning equipment actually looked just like this, and then they had something called a reclaimer. And that's basically a dryer. And as Nathan King explained earlier, when they were finished washing the clothes in the PCE, and the reason they used PCE is fairly obvious, it needed to be, quote, a dry process. It's because you don't want to put your wool suit in hot water. It doesn't come out, you know, the same size you put it in. So it's very important that we're dealing with a special chemical here, PCE. And by the way, a very good dry cleaning chemical other than the environmental issues we're dealing with. When this equipment was transferred, there would be saturated clothes containing up to 5 to 7% PCE in the clothes themselves, pounds and pounds of PCE. They actually had these things called transfer tables that had little drains in them, and, you know, things would drain onto the floor from the table. So that was very common in a dry cleaner. There were also other sources of releases of waste during the dry cleaning operation during the 1960s and 70s. We know that there was separator water, so we've talked a little bit about the sewers. We've talked about the sludge and the vapors and the spills and leaks. I'm going to spend a second on the boil overs because these are a particularly problematic issue with dry cleaners that have these stills. PCE and water are very unique in that they form a unique chemical combination referred to as an azeotrope. And what that means is PCE, which has a boiling point of 121 degrees centigrade, and water, which has a boiling point of 100 degrees centigrade, when they get to a certain combination, I think it's about 3 or 4% mixture, the boiling point actually drops to 88 degrees. So you've got this dry cleaner operator trying to boil off his PCE to reclaim it, and it gets to this magic point where you hit this azeotrope, and I'm sure a lot of these dry cleaners studied that in their chemistry class, and we're all prepared for this. They got this relatively explosive sort of thing called a boil over. They're so common, there's names for them. And I've talked to dry cleaners, and these things didn't occur, you know, once a year. They occurred once a month. They happened because any time you got into this distillation process, there was this chance you're going to run across that magic azeotrope concentration. And so we know that there were releases. Every dry cleaner site that I've looked at, talked to operators, we know that they had these boil overs. So this is actually from the dry cleaner manual for the SF-130. So we know a fair amount about this type of equipment, how it's operated. We've reviewed the manuals. And once again, it's unambiguous. This is for use with perchloroethylene. So we know that this dry cleaning operation during the tenure when UATC controlled the property had PCE, used it, and there were releases. So I'll talk about the vertical distribution of PCE. Because this, once again, there's been a fair amount of talk about the relative elevations of groundwater. The PCE, looking at this vertical distribution, is a line of evidence that there were releases during United Artists Theater Circuit. The groundwater elevations were lower in the 60s and 70s, and we'll take a look at some of the information on that. PCE migrated down to this clay layer. Nathan King earlier today talked about this relatively impermeable layer, and I think there were some questions asked by members of the board about when the PCE go down there and get hung up. Yeah, there's a fairly thick material, very much like that aquitard that Ms. Peabody was talking about. We know that the groundwater elevations rose, and what we see is higher PCE concentrations at depth and lower in the shallower.
I'm going to give you a time check, which is that you have very little time left.
Okay. Well,
so if you could move through to your strongest arguments.
I will move through to the strongest arguments. So let me just hit the highlights. The Santa Clara subbasin, we do have groundwater elevation information. This information is available online. It's been part of the record. So I know there was a fair amount of question about that. This shows the vertical distribution and the higher concentrations at depth.
Before you leave that.
Yes.
Because I would ask this question anyway. It says, I want to know where this cross-section is, and it says historical water levels 71, 72, and or 71, 73, 76. The next one. So this shows deeper.
Yes.
And it also shows, I can see now, your boreholes. Where is that cross-section trending?
This is right in front of the dry cleaner. So that's the building right there. This is trending in the northeast.
So it trends to the north.
Yep, northeast. And I'll show you with the rose diagrams that will address the groundwater flow direction here in a second.
Okay.
So I'll spend a second on the length of plume. There were a fair amount of calculations talking about when the release occurred based upon the length of plume. It's actually quite a bit longer. This is what was included in the EKI, Erler and Kalinowski document. But there were data that were not included in their plume length. There's actually PCE that's migrated off into this residential neighborhood. You double the length of the plume, and you increase the amount of time the PCE has been in the environment. So that's a very important point. Groundwater flow direction. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on the losing and gaining because I think we've talked about that, other than to say it's very limited in extent. These are the diagrams you've seen. These are actually the rose diagrams based upon the groundwater elevation data that exist. And yes, there is flow to the northeast when there's a losing stream condition up till 95. Yes, there is flow to the southwest. But these diagrams are actually plots of the data and the frequency of the events and the direction. So there was no flow to the northwest as hypothetically presented by UAT's consultant. Same thing when we're a gaining stream. It doesn't reverse the way they show the arrow. We have the data from the Shell station. These plots are taken from the data included in the technical report presented by UATC, and it doesn't reverse the way it says it does. And I believe that was also covered in the staff report. So we talked about the discharge during UATC control of the site. We've talked about the multiple lines of evidence. I only have one other thing to comment on because the schedule has been addressed. We were requesting a clarification in the order because it includes both cleanup goals, specified cleanup goals, and there's a task that says that we should recommend final cleanup goals. We were just hoping, should Nathan King not be our staff person down the road, that there be some clarifying language indicating there that the current goals are interim cleanup goals. And that is, I believe, covers the highlights. If you have any questions, please let me know.
Would you go back to that cross-section that I was so enamored with? Because I want to be very clear on what the data says in the period prior to 1990 as to the depth of groundwater. So what is the depth to groundwater shown here? You've got data points for the concentrations. What was the depth to groundwater?
That's about close to 50, 70 feet, somewhere in that range, 80 feet.
So it was 70 feet still to groundwater
during the time period UATC was there. That's based upon the same well. I know that UATC's consultant doesn't necessarily agree that that nearby well that we use this plot for is representative of shallow groundwater. But if I follow along the same theories that UATC's consultant has, and you know that there was shallow groundwater, that that well isn't representative, well, then you've got to look at this data and say, the PCE, in any case, would have migrated down to this clay layer.
But it looks like there's seven wells represented here.
Those are some of those are grab groundwater samples. Some of those are monitoring wells.
Okay.
So we do have groundwater elevation data from that nearby Chevron and Shell, but this is really just focusing on the chemical distribution.
So in terms of the stratigraphy, some of these would have casing records and soil samples, and some of them would not.
We have, I think, very few soil samples from the borings, but we have a lot of PID readings. We do have some soil samples. We have lots of lithology. We have mapped the vertical stratigraphy in detail at the site.
Thank you.
Any other questions at this time? All right. Is it the board's preference to meet in closed session with our advisory team, or not. Yes?
I would like to meet with the advisory team and not with the remainder of the staff.
That's
one of the advantages.
That's how it would go.
That's how we roll.
That would call a closed session.
Can I ask just a procedural question?
Yes.
Scott Reich for UATC. Will you be coming back out of closed session to talk to us?
Yes, we will.
Okay. Thank you.
We will be meeting with our advisors, who are Bruce Wolf and his team, as well as Tamron Austin, who's the state board attorney, asking them questions in closed session to clarify whatever we need clarified. Then I think we'll bring everyone back, make a decision on this item, and at that point, we'll figure out what order we do the rest of our business in.
Okay, thank you.
So hang around outside.
Thank you.
And we'll call you back.
Question.
And just to try to provide opportunities for anybody to seek lunch or not, how long do you have some sense on how long we may?
Well, we have another executive session matter, don't we?
We could lump the two together in order
Let's
to give everyone
for lunch at least
enough time to go out and get some lunch, or we could come back and.
Okay, but I just want to also be prepared to have our, if that's the case, our second closed session queued up. So trying to look around to see who's our party. Yep, Lila's there, I see.
Bruce, we'll do it in whatever order you like.
Okay, well, I would agree with the board that right now the appropriate to go into closed session to discuss the Moonlight matter. Some of the team is saying, as we clear the room, is that enough chance to grab a sandwich?
Yes.
Okay.
I'll make sure of that.
Okay. Right. So that's as part of the advisory team. So for everyone in the room, that implies that the closed session will be the board and the advisory team of myself, Tamron, and Alex. And so if the board wants to consume its lunch at the same time and then go into the second closed session, we can do that. Okay.
Gotcha.
Great.